Welcome to the Myofascial Magic in Action podcast. I'm Joanne Averson, and this is my very dear friend and colleague, Paul Thornley.
How are you doing, guys?
So what we wanted to talk about today seems to be popular subject number one just at the moment. Variations on the theme of painful shoulder, chronic shoulder impingement, injured shoulders. What else would we call it?
Sometimes they call it, it gets frozen, like it becomes immobilized.
Yep.
They're referring neuropathy down their fingertips. They have all sorts of pain going into their necks. There's a variety, isn't there? And for a variety of reasons, people are experiencing it at different times of the year.
Exactly. And I don't think it's necessarily seasonal, although I see it a lot in my practice as related to menopause. So one's not exactly saying, oh, frozen shoulder is a hormone thing, but very clearly there's a relationship between hormones and neuromyofascial movement responses. Yes,
yes, exactly. I think you're right.
And it's a super popular theme at the moment. And I also wonder, this is just me thinking aloud, whether the change in weather, we've got a lot of cold weather here, and you were over here last week, and it was an absolute joy to work with you and a client who came in with a completely locked arm, crying horizontal tears, literally in fear that she was, A, getting too old to ever move properly again, because it's really frightening when you can't raise your right arm, particularly if you're right-handed. And I just really respectful of the sheer panic when she discovered that she couldn't move her arms, she was getting pins and needles, she couldn't lift her arms, she couldn't find any movements that she could do. And this is a very mobile, active, 73-year-old woman who keeps herself lovely and fit and just couldn't work out what was going on. And it was like her body had just said, nope, you're not moving.
I don't think there's anything more vulnerable or threatening to you when you lose the ability to move freely. And when you are trying to move and just do your daily activities, like your body responds in such a defensive way and it elicits this painful reaction to the movement that you would normally do in your without even thinking. And this particular client, she'd just done something very quickly, inappropriately, out of the character, and her body defended itself and really sharply created an immobilization of her arm. And we were very fortunate that she hadn't done any serious damage. It was just a defensive neurological response to a quite rapid action that once we listen to her story and we find out the tale of the events that led up to this over a number of weeks.
It was amazing, wasn't it? Because we were doing the usual, and just to give you context, guys, while you're listening to this, this was one of my clients and Paul was visiting and we had a student that we were teaching. And it was fabulous because that student is studying neuromuscular therapy, which is what Paul's been doing for the last 25 years. And I teach on the course. So it was like this mixture of possibilities. And the client was like, I'm in an emergency, help. And I said, well, if you want to be a model in a class, please come now, sort of thing. And the action that she'd taken after we did the note taking and the history taking, because you've got to be a detective first and foremost, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Was that she'd done a series of different things, but she'd borrowed someone else's car. And the car boot or trunk, whichever you call it, was at a completely different angle to the one that she's used to. And she'd had to reach up a couple of times over her head with her hand behind her to pull the lid of this trunk or boot closed. And she wondered if that had aggravated it. And I think I watched you work so intuitively. It really was a joy to watch you work, Paul. I have to say that. If anyone in Dubai is listening to this, you lucky things, you, because you've got Paul Thornley at hand. You kind of sussed that was the key movement once you discovered that it wasn't a bony impingement or a deeper issue.
And that's the patience required to go through that, not assume things. We often, as therapists and movement practitioners, we assume that our favorite technique will work on everybody. And I think it's very important people learn to take a step back and respect the uniqueness of the person in front of you and the actions that they perform daily and what was that triggered this natural response of the body to survive because it felt threatened for whatever reason. And once that we took that time, then identifying the problem and then creating an appropriate solution wasn't that difficult. Because once I had her confidence that it wasn't a structural issue that she created over many years of using her body, and she was in fabulous shape, but she asked a lot of her body, and there's a lot of ramifications the way people use it, but she was not in a negative way at all. It just, this was a one-off isolated thing, that it was quite clear that if I respected her myofascial relationship and tissue of not only of her shoulder, but of her neck and of her thoracic and her ribs, and I did a little bit of work on her liver, that the body wanted to heal itself. It was trying to do that anyway, and I just helped guide it so it did it in a more speedy and effective way. And 12 hours later, after I'd finished my session and showed her some very subtle micro movements to manage her early morning routine, to take away this need and this expectation she must stretch when she feels stiff. And I said, please just avoid that for this next few days and try this slightly different approach. And she was all for it because she felt the success of the treatment. So she had confidence in what I was asking her to do. And the next day, I wasn't expected to see her again, was I? She banged on the door at 8 o'clock in the morning.
12 hours later.
That's great. With a big smile on her face, fully made up, ready for her day's action. She looked happy. It's not like she'd never had an injury in her life. And she wrapped the same arm that she couldn't move around me and gave me a big hug to say thank you, because she was about to go on holiday the next couple of days and enjoy some well-earned break with her partner and her family.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, it was a really great, rewarding opportunity.
And I think when we're working with our fabulous MMIA specialists, oh my God, I just love them so much. What a group. I feel so privileged. The inquiries and the discussion that we worked on working round the shoulder,
it was
so kind of magical to see the revelation, because you know that my son had had a shoulder injury and he'd been in a very genuine accident. I mean, he didn't do anything that was built up. He had a dislocation of his shoulder. And it was all that process of you working with him on Zoom, God bless you. Not that I don't know anything about shoulders. Can I just say a little defensive thing? As mummy, you don't try and tell anyone what to do. I'm telling you now.
I think the phrase is familiarity breeds contempt, right? I don't know any son that listened to his mom's advice straight away. We all challenge it though.
I know. And bless his heart. I mean, when he was 9 years old, Paul, I have to share this with you. I was teaching as a teaching assistant to Tom Myers in Maine, and I was teaching for the whole summer. And he was nine. And so I called my close friend and her son, and she came out with me, and she looked after the boys while I was teaching during the day. And one day we'd run out of models for the school. And so I said to Zara, why don't you come with the boys? I said to Tom, why don't we teach some pediatric anatomy? And you know what's so incredible about working with fascia with children is the speed with which they respond. It's unbelievable. So we've got these 2 9-year-olds, and we're body reading them and we're putting them through the series of structural work. And oh my God. And you wouldn't have known the difference it made till Ben was 16 and he went out to work with my colleague Shane, and Shane was teaching body reading, and he asked Ben to be the model at 16. And Ben straight away turns around. He says, oh yeah, I've got a right side bend in my cervical spine relative to my thoracics and my blah, 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 blah. And Shane's going, will you be quiet? I'm teaching this. Will you be quiet? And he phones me up. He goes, where did he get all that from? And I said, he grew up in the classroom. So he's got this incredible instinct, not to mention a master's degree in sports and exercise science, but that's very different intellectual knowledge to the practical application of what you do in practice, number one. Number two, it's very difficult to self-diagnose. I run to you or John or Wilbur or somebody when I hurt myself. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, there's a reason why we don't treat next of kin, right?
Exactly. It all turns into a row. It's like teasing how to drive.
Oh, don't even go. We're not even going to have that story. I've got stories of teaching Ben to drive that will come out of your... I will be here all day. So back to the shoulder. We think there's a compression fracture, but he dislocated his shoulder. So now we're talking about not somebody, a woman in her 70s. We're talking about a very young, fit 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Super fit 30-year-old.
Yeah.
And share about that, the grace with which you were able to change the way he was going.
It's a different conversation, isn't it? Because that's the whole point. Every opportunity like this gives you another opportunity and another way of explaining something. And you have to find the right dialogue. And with talking to Ben, because he's so knowledgeable about his own ability and his own bias and his own limitations, I was able to instruct him over Zoom. And he understood how to incorporate my cueing well and how to use a flexiband to help give him the compressive sensation so he get the right feedback. And then he understood what type of feedback and how to respond to it. And as I guided that tensional reaction, he was able to relocate the head of his humerus properly and then create a lot nicer rhythmic patterning of his arm and recognize where the limitation still was and how much time delay there is in this rehabilitative process. And because he's so fit and he's so active, he's so keen to get back to what he was doing before he dislocated it quite violently, because these dislocations don't happen over time. They happen immediately and it's quite a violent reaction. And young tissue does heal very quickly. And that's the nature of fascia. It is the tissue of temporality, as you so often say and explain why. So once we appreciate the ingredients and we understand what those ingredients have made of and how they respond to certain approaches and certain forces, it's quite easy then to influence appropriately depending on the time of rehabilitation. Just like your cooking, you need to know when to incorporate certain ingredients to create a certain effect so that you create something delicious. And in movement, we want delicious movement, especially when often and all too often, it's a very aggressive approach to rehabilitation. And it's almost as aggressive as the way you required the rehabilitative approach. And we just go to the other end of the spectrum where we are a lot more subtle, well, but more respectful of these living harmonic tissues. And we call them myofascial. And then we have a different conversation with them. And thankfully, we get these remarkable results from 73 to 30. It makes no difference because the tissue is still trying to be vibrant. It's still thriving within you. And it still has the capability and characteristics to be influenced appropriately if you take your time.
I just love it. And the other thing that I wanted to say to you, you've probably come across this yourself. One of the, how can I say this? I suppose it's one of the memes in the fascia world, the myofascial world, understanding fascia, because we're learning the language of this all-encompassing continuous tissue.
Yes.
And we're learning it from a world of where we learned about biomechanics, that everything is separate, that it comes together to do something, like the parts of a car come together to perform or to function, shall we say.
Yeah.
And in a podcast I did recently with John Sharkey, we talk about contiguity and continuity. One where two things come together and form a border.
Yeah.
And I think the difficult thing about this paradigm shift that we're in is that the borders in the body come together out of the folding of the whole that is completely continuous.
Yes.
So this is a very profound distinction. And it's not just coming together of boundaries of tissues, but types of tissues that we've segregated. And where I'm going with this is sometimes when people come in with right shoulder pain and all the surrounding protectiveness in motion, it's caused by the gallbladder because of the organization of the nerve tissue. So I know you mentioned earlier that you looked at the viscera pattern in this client in her 70s as well, in order to ensure that wasn't part of the story.
Yeah.
And without getting too analytical, I think what's so wonderful about it is that we're not saying that the viscera is separate.
Not at all. How can it be?
From the so-called musculoskeletal system. And there isn't a musculoskeletal system really, is there?
Well, not really, because it's just a figment of our imagination. And our imagination is vibrant and it's very colourful. And back in the day when we had to utilise that imagination to explain the unseen to a very small community that would then spread the message globally as we were able to print it and communicate it around the world, they had to create something that they recognized. So they used what they saw externally. That was building styles, architectural forms, carpentry, mechanics. It made sense. The people that investigated the human body back in the day, 400, 500 years ago, they were horologists and clockmakers and you name it, all sorts of architects. And they were amazing people, right? And thank God they did it. But what they were removing was the way things had natural integration and continuity. They created parts and pieces just out of curiosity. But when you put those pieces back together, unlike a machine that you then do that to create form and function, we don't jump up and come back to life. We are lifeless when you're creating these parts and pieces. And just like you said about the borders, about these, we create borders out of mythical interpretations. Well, that's the very same as the borders around the earth. There is no borders in the earth. We create countries out of ownership, out of our dominance, and we dictate a border. We say, this is the end of my country, and this is where you begin. And we have taken that from time immemorial into how we explain everything. It's all about conforming to somebody else's interpretation of space and movement. And we control movement around our earth, and we control movement within us based on somebody else's opinion and explanation of us, rather than understand our uniqueness to roam the earth without any inhibition. And we should be able to do the same with our bodies. But unfortunately, because we've got into these patterns and habits of conforming, we then move in isolation. We challenge ourselves in parts and pieces. We have leg day, chest day, back day, bum day, dysfunctional day, whatever day you want to call it.
Well, you call them all dysfunctional day because it's, this is so fundamental. I love this because we separate physiology from psychology. And we talk about an embodied practice. And you know, one of the things that's in the first part of my book, where else do we have to go? We're embodied anyway.
Yes.
And the idea that the gut formed completely separately from the skeleton is nonsense. Look forward to book three, The Heart-Centered Embryo. The heart starts first. The heart feeds the brain. And then the heart designs the spine. Hello.
Yes, I know.
And the organs and the liver develops to filter blood to the heart to feed the brain with clean, pure blood to the best of its ability. So this idea that any part of us forms separate from anything else. You study the embryo. Oh my goodness. We won't go there now. But what I love is what you're saying, that the embryonic awareness, the soul awareness that animates this physical stuff of us. Actually, when we remove the fascia to see the parts, we remove the communication system. We remove the links. We remove the completeness of the continuity.
That's right.
And we can't rule out the viscera from movement.
Well,
right?
and if we bring ourselves back to the shoulder and we take on exactly what you just mentioned there, that visceral sensation to life, to experience, good, bad, or ugly, it is animated in our actions and our shape and our form. And that form then determines how we react and respond in a timely or defensive manner. So people who often have shoulder issues, and it's got nothing to do with the shoulders, it turns out, it's often because of an emotional response to something that happened externally to them. Their interpretation of a daily event, whether we had a guy a long time ago, and he was a plumber, and he just did a job. He had to fit in a job that he hadn't got time to, but he did. He made the effort. He did the job, and he wasn't getting paid. This lady, all of a sudden, I don't quite have the money now. Can you call back for it? He went, I did the job. I went out on my way. Okay, I'll go back and collect the money next week. And every time he went back, there was no money for him. And what happened was he got more stressed and more bugged. And it wasn't even a lot of money. It was just the fact that it was irritating. He had to go back. And he had this chronic pain in his shoulder, absolutely driving me mental. Turns out when they put the electrodes on, they wanted to test what was going on. And they wanted to know about his life. They were trying to ascertain why he had this chronic pain. And it turned out every time he explained about this story, like we're talking now, so he wasn't over-animated, he was just explaining his frustration. The flipping needle was going off the chart as all of this extra erratic electricity, this physiological response was stimulating in his shoulder just by the memory of this irritating lady who hadn't paid her bloody bill. And the therapist said to him, just delegate that job, send somebody else to collect the money and forget about it. within 2 days, his shoulder pain had disappeared completely. He'd forgotten all about it. It had nothing to do with his shoulder. He had more needles and cupping and massages, and they were almost planning surgery to check inside and do some sort of investigation that way, all because he was frustrated.
Where else is it going to go? What? Why? Oh, I love you. Bioemotional intelligence
yes.
lives in the tissue, and it's everywhere. And yes. in my world, there's a physical and imaginational, there's yes. a emotional, there's a mental, there's an etheric or subconscious, and there's a soul. And it's all those sheaths are fighting for congruency, and they're fighting for, well, not fighting, but they're negotiating, shall
yes,
we say.
Yes, that's right. They're organizing themselves, aren't they?
Organizing themselves for awareness. And so is it a surprise that when a baby's hungry, it gets a pain in its tummy and its face screws up and it goes, ah, because that's what it's trying to tell you. It's got colic. It's hungry. It's cold. I remember when I was a kid, and we'll finish here bringing it not only that the viscera and the musculoskeletal system are not separate, but that the emotional system is part of it. I love that example. I remember I was quite young, and we lived opposite a head of pediatrics at Chase Farm Hospital. She was a friend of ours. And I remember because she commissioned me to paint murals in the children's corridor so the children weren't frightened when they were sitting waiting to be seen. And so I just painted clowns chasing butterflies all the way around the corridor so the kids were completely preoccupied. And she was wonderful. And I was out with her one day, and we were listening to a child, a baby, a relatively newborn baby with no hat on its head. And the mother was shaking the pushchair to try and rock the baby.
Yeah, to soothe her.
To soothe the baby. Totally well-intentioned parents doing their utmost. And I remember this doctor, I won't name her because it's not appropriate, but she turned around to me and she said, "That baby's cold." I went, "Sorry?" She said, "That baby's cold." At that age, 80% of their body heat is lost through her head. It needs a little warm knitted nothing just over its head. And I said, "How do you know that?" And she said, "Listen, when you listen carefully," I mean, she'd been doing it for freaking 30 years, for God's sake. She could hear, she said, "When you hear a hungry cry, you hear it's guttural, it's visceral.
Mm.
And when you hear a colicky cry, it's got another quality to it. Mm. It's not always the same with every baby, but you'll see the physiological response in the tummy." Mm. She said, "But this baby is cold and it doesn't know what to do. And the yes. mother can't get it to respond because it's cold. It needs a hat."
Yeah.
And I just sat there thinking, oh my goodness, we don't name that. But what she was actually doing through her experience, through her years of training and listening,
yeah.
she was translating these subtle nuances in the quality of a baby's cry.
Yes.
Because that baby, bioemotionally, was expressing itself as clear as day, right?
Yeah. And that's the whole point, right? We're not taught the language of a human. We're taught the language of our environment, of what we're being taught to conform to. And we often ignore the clear signals the body sends, the clear expression of its happiness, joy, its fearfulness, its anxieties. And we try to dominate that with a diagnosis. We tell the body what's wrong with it rather than listen to it and find out what it's trying to express. Especially, look at that, even in a baby form, there's a clear expression that person has become very fluent in hearing because they spend their time around them. But that poor mum, unfortunately, is tired, is exhausted, doesn't know what to listen for and requires guidance. And that's where we fit in our world. We are there to guide people's experience of their body because people are not used to listening to themselves. They're used to giving their body to a third party and saying, "Can you look after me? Can you take care of this? Because I don't know how to."
They want to translate.
That's what we are. And that's what we do. We translate the body's expression and animation to joy and threat so that we can animate it and we can restore it so it has the capabilities to move as freely as possible.
And that, my darling, is myofascial magic in action, is it not?
Indeed it is.
So thanks for listening, everybody, and check out the show notes for everything that's going on. And we look forward to coming together again in a couple of weeks' time. Have a great day and a magical time.